From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of the annual Wood Carvers exhibit at Eagle Creek.
I'll chat with singer Toni Deckers about her music.
And I'll find out about a public art contest being organized by the Da Vinci Pursuits. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. More than a dozen woodworkers will showcase artistic and functional pieces of art and provide demonstrations during Eagle Creek Park's annual Woodcarver and Turner Exhibit and Sale, Saturday, February 23rd and Sunday, February 24th at the Earth Discovery Center. Items on display revolve around wildlife, flora, and fauna through wood carving, wood burning, and wood turning. Travis DiNicola spoke with Jim Dupler, wood turner, and Jay Powell, naturalist at Eagle Creek Park, and organizer of the art series, to find out more.
Jim, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you again.
Glad to be here.
And Jay, welcome. Nice to meet you and have you on the air.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. Well, as I was just saying, in fact, before we went on the air, I've always been so impressed by this annual show that's out at Eagle Creek this weekend at Earth Discovery Center. Amazing, I think, wood carving as well as wood turning and all types of woodwork. Jay, let me start with you. Tell me a bit about the background of the show, because you're kind of the main organizer this year, right?
I am, yeah. This will actually be the 23rd annual Woodcarver Show out at Eagle Creek Park. It's gone through a few changes over the years. It's been at a few different locations in different areas of the park. This year, it's going to be at the Earth Discovery Center, which is the main nature center there, right kind of in the middle of the park, right on the water.
Mm-hmm. And that's fairly recently been remodeled and redone, right?
It has. It opened up in 2007, and we do a lot of school programs, environmental education with kids. A lot of schools come out to do their annual field trips, and we see a lot of kids from all over the area.
Sure. Sure, I think the first time that I ever went to the Woodcarver's exhibit was kind of like almost in a little cabin near the other nature center. I'm trying to remember where it was. It was a little bit smaller. I know it's grown quite a lot over the years.
Yeah, it used to be at the Ornithology Center.
Which
at the time was known as the Nature Center. And the Nature Center closed for a few years for renovations and opened up back in 2009 as the Ornithology Center. And there was a structure just north of that called Lily Lodge, and the Nature Center and Lily Lodge co-hosted a lot of the art shows that used to happen at the park. So folks might be a little more familiar up on the north end with some of those shows.
Now, one thing that I think is really nice about this exhibit is, I mean, not only is it featuring really great wood carving, wood burning, wood turning, but the subject matter, for the most part, is really dealing with, the subject is nature as well. So the artists are using wood, but, I mean, there's a lot of carvings of nature, and that's kind of the theme throughout, right?
Absolutely, yeah. We really like to, we have three art shows that we put on throughout the year at Eagle Creek, and all the themes surround nature. I think Eagle Creek is a pretty special place, and a pretty unique place to be such a vast natural area so close to a city center. So we really try to showcase that aspect of the park. Really kind of stands out, and we hope the art shows attract a variety of people and a lot of people who might might otherwise not come out to the park.
At least not this time of year.
Exactly.
I mean, I would imagine, yeah,
exactly.
maybe late February isn't always the time a lot of people are thinking, hey, let's go to the park today,
slow,
right?
A little slow at times, for sure.
But it's absolutely beautiful out there. I mean,
it is.
You know, I mean, even though, you know, the leaves are off the trees, but then you can see forever, and you know, it's just a totally different feel and stuff. And
we've had a lot.
Still great for hiking. And
absolutely. A lot of rare birds we've seen this year. Mm-hmm. Just the other day, I heard the first sandhill cranes flying over the reservoirs. So it's a sure sign that spring is on its way when you hear the sandhill cranes.
Very good. Well, Jay, let me turn this to you. I'm sorry, Jim, let me turn this to you. We were just talking with Jay. Jim, you've been involved with this exhibit for a couple of years. In fact, last year you were on Art of the Matter talking about your wood turning. And for those of us, because last year I did not, but for those of us who may not know exactly what wood turning is and how that's different from wood carving, let's start with that. The work that you do, your bowls and other pieces like that, is that part of it?
Yes, it's all done on a turning lathe.
Mm-hmm.
The wood is spinning. You hold a sharp chisel in your hands and sculpt the wood, basically. Then after I take it off the lathe, a lot of the pieces I do some carving, some mm-hmm. burning, and some related handwork like that on them also, where some are just strictly functional bowls and things like that. Others are more artwork that are really just designed to sit on a shelf and look at. So I try to have a little mix of each.
Well, very good. So tell me about your involvement with this show. I mean, you've been doing it a couple of years.
It's been about 10
like
years now.
Great opportunity for you to meet, I mean, you know, people who like your work as well as other artists as well.
Right. It's kind of like a old home week for us.
Yeah.
We've been a lot of the same artists
mm-hmm.
over the years. So we like to catch up what we've done the last year. And some of the gentlemen bring in wood, and we swap back and forth and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always fun to see how each of us are growing in a craft.
And what are some of the pieces you're going to be bringing this year?
I'll have some little mortar and pestles I'm bringing this year. I've sold a few at other shows, so I thought, mm-hmm. well, there is an interest in kind of grinding your own herbs and spices.
Oh, certainly.
So I'm bringing some of those. I'll have some like jewelry, some wooden bracelets. Some little wooden buckets that I've been making. They look like a little wooden bucket. And
mm-hmm.
really just pen holder, something like that. And plus then just some basic bowls about the size of a good soup bowl that I put some little wooden scoops in. They work really well for peanuts, M&Ms, things like that. I started out calling the little scoops coffee scoops, but they lend themselves very well to, you know, other little
those some pretty functional things.
Yeah,
well,
functional
yeah.
too. Yeah, so that's fun.
How'd you get involved with this, Jim? Is something that you've been wood turning for quite a long time, if I remember right. Even before you moved to New York,
probably.
Yeah.
So really, I've been at it a long time. I've always made my living as a woodworker.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my wood turning involves turning architectural pieces and furniture repair pieces. You know, the broken spindles and chairs and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's how I basically make my living. But
more on the furniture side, but
yeah, mm-hmm. the wood turning's always been my hobby, my passion,
yeah,
like that. So as I've grown more and more, and I've gotten into more art galleries and shows,
mm-hmm.
it's become a bigger part of my life.
Very cool. So Jay, tell me about some of the other artists that we're going to get to see. I mean, it sounds like just a great mix of people that are going to be out there.
We do, yeah. We're really fortunate to have a really nice variety of artists coming out to the show this year. We've got folks coming. We have one gentleman who's coming up from Kentucky. He comes up every year. He actually makes a lot of his items with driftwood that mm-hmm. he's gathered from. He lives right around the Ohio River. So he's gathered up driftwood from around the river, and he makes a lot of his items with that. We've got some folks like Jim here, local,
mm-hmm.
Local folks from the Indianapolis area. We also have a few coming from the surrounding Fishers, Noblesville, mm-hmm. Lisdon. We've got Crawfordsville. So a lot of, I believe we have a few couples who will be doing, one gentleman does wood carving and
mm-hmm.
his wife does wood burning. So she'll actually have a few flat, large pieces of wood, and she has a little a wood burning tool that she uses. And sometimes he'll carve birds, and then she'll do a lot of the more intricate wood burning and the detail and the feathers and the eyes and the beaks and all that stuff. So
I remember, you know, seeing in the past some of, especially the wood carvings of birds, whether they be decoys or more just sort of models and beautiful pieces, just really stood out for me as far as the attention to detail.
They really do. They really do a great job. It's, you really, I think, have to be a real naturalist to get a really good idea of what these animals really look like. And you can see a lot, you know, in the pictures. You know, pictures can tell you something, but you really need to be out there and see what they look like up close in real life. And
really,
and a lot of these
it.
Folks really do that. I think they really are naturalists at heart, and they go out and they just kind of try to recreate what they've seen.
Will there be any demos at all throughout the 2 days?
We do have some really talented folks who will be demonstrating. We've got a few that bring out hammer and chisel. Is that what you call it, Jim?
Sure, mallet and chisel.
We will have a few folks who will bring small lathes out, like Jim works on.
Sure.
And they'll be doing some turning. I will be having, for the kids, I've set up a little soap carving table. So
nice.
With some kid-friendly tools. We won't have any power tools near your three-year-olds, but we use Ivory soap.
Because I got to tell you, some of the tools I know Jim uses are a little frightening.
Yeah, they're a little much. I don't know if I trust my three-year-old around some of Jim's tools. But Ivory soap has a texture that's really soft, and you can actually carve it with just a popsicle stick.
Wow.
So
that's pretty cool.
So I'll be getting a bunch of Ivory soap, some popsicle sticks, and some plastic spoons, and got some other things set out for the kids so mom and dad can walk around and look at some of the artwork, and little boys and girls feel free to try their hand at some soap.
What time are the both days, for Saturday and Sunday, that the
show
is open?
The show will be both Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 5, the same hours as the nature center's open.
Okay. So Jim, obviously you don't work with soap. What are some of the favorite woods that you like working with? Or maybe you do work with soap. Maybe I don't know about that.
Yeah, really. Soap is nice. You know, doesn't dull your chisels at all. So a cherry is probably one of my favorite. I do a lot of my work out of cherry, just because when you oil it, it just comes out with just a wonderful mellow reddish brown color, and it does work well and stuff like that. And even the hard maples really machine well, things like that. So I'll occasionally do some with some of the exotic woods, but there's plenty enough Native American hardwoods.
Yeah, where do you get your woods usually? I mean, how do you go about doing that?
Generally, just around the neighborhood. You know, if a tree blows down or something, I'm there with my little chainsaw and, you know, cut it up. And I belong to a local wood turning club. It's part of the American Association of Wood Turners. And guys are always bringing in wood. We swap and trade and things like that. So there always seem to be plenty of wood available. And just a little quick plug, the American Association of Wood Turners is probably the largest craft club in the country. We have over 15,000 members. So the wood turning field is quite a large growing body of work and stuff like that. So that's what keeps bringing work up to a higher level each year. So
if someone comes out and is inspired, they can get some more information about perhaps pursuing this.
A lot of my time is spent talking to fellow woodworkers that want to get interested and get involved. And
maybe they do some other type of work and would like to learn more about turning or what have you.
Sure, like that. So I'm really good for that, for a lot of information. And we'll have literature for our club and things like that, if times and dates. So
okay.
And one last thing, too. I'd like to plug the staff again at the park and the volunteers. They do a wonderful job setting up, meeting our needs. They take very good care of us. They provide food for us vendors, not for the public, but for us vendors. So we all kind of joke that we come back each year just for the food because of how well they treat us and feed us. So,
well, that's great. Well, I wish you both a great weekend. I know it's going to be a lot of fun. Great crowds and great day. Jim and Jay, thank you so much for coming into Art of the Matter. Real pleasure to chat with you both.
Yes, our pleasure.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
Hope to see you this weekend.
Travis DiNicola with Jim Dupler, wood turner, and Jay Powell, naturalist at Eagle Creek Park. Eagle Creek Park's annual wood carver and turner exhibit and sale takes place this Saturday, February 23rd, and Sunday, February 24th, at the Earth Discovery Center. For more information, visit eaglecreekpark.org, eaglecreekpark.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Singer Toni Deckers used to raid her parents' jazz record collection, and it shows in her smooth, sultry vocal style. The Indianapolis songstress has just released her first album, Shades of Blue, and she dropped in to talk with Sharon Gamble about how Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, and Rosemary Clooney shaped her style, and how she finds her own groove.
So, church was the first place you found your voice?
Yes, I was about 6 years old.
Oh my gosh. And did your family encourage you to sing?
Yes, my grandfather was a minister, so always being involved in church and choir, and of course, yes, children's choir. And I think I was about 6 years old when I did my first talent show.
Oh my gosh.
And it was a church talent show,
what,
of course.
What did you perform?
Amazing Grace.
Oh my. What a, you know, and everybody loves it, but it's harder to sing than it seems like it should be.
It is.
It has a pretty broad range, and you have to really have good breath control and be in control of how you deliver the phrases.
Yes. I don't think I gave it that much thought.
Probably
as a 6-year-old.
Probably not at that age, yeah. You just did it instinctively.
I just knew I knew the words.
Yeah. And the tune. So you're a young woman, but in school, you may have listened to pop music, but you were also listening to people like Bing Crosby, Nat King Cole. That caused you any trouble?
I was a bit of a music nerd.
Uh huh.
I didn't know a lot of the pop stuff going on. And trips to the record store were not highly looked upon. But I was actually really drawn to the old stuff. My parents bought me a record player when I was a child. I mm-hmm. loved my record player and all the appropriate albums that went with it. And as I got older, I realized I didn't want to keep listening to the children's records. And like I said, trips to the record store weren't always an option. So I just went down to the basement and stole some of my parents' albums.
So was there something, were you more attracted to the history of these performers? Was it the style? Was it, I mean, sometimes people get hooked on somebody for no better reason than they like the cover artwork of an album. I mean, could you figure out something in particular that kind of pulled you in that direction other than the accessibility? It was right there in the house.
Right. I loved the richness of the songs. And generally, classic jazz or standards are pretty happy songs. They're singing about...
found love.
Yes. For example, the song Blue Moon, it's talking about opportunities that come along once in a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was always drawn to that, the happiness of it. And granted, there are some sadder songs, but I would say as a whole, it feels more optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I should probably research that, but I don't know if it was a cultural thing, that that's what people needed to hear at the time. But I just found that I liked this, the message of the music, and then the richness of the artist that sang it. It wasn't brassy, it wasn't poppy, it was just soothing and mm-hmm. relaxing. And it fit my personality.
Gave a sense of ease in a busy world.
Yes.
Which your album, Shades of Blue, really does. But I want to ask you about, you have so many great classic torch songs on here. Blue Moon, which you mentioned, Blue Skies, Wonderful World, Time After Time, not the one that immediately came to people's minds from the 80s, by the way.
Yes.
I Love You for Sentimental Reasons. The arrangements, some of the arrangements, many if not most of these are ballads, but some of the arrangements make them more dance tunes. For example, Blue Moon, which is often sung as a ballad, is kind of a dance tune. Talk to me about these arrangements. And you have a wonderful band you sing with.
Yes, I was very proud of the musicians that I had on this album. The great thing is, it was a very enjoyable collaborative effort. And when we sat down to work on the songs, they said, how do you want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have an idea in my mind about kind of the direction I wanted it to go. And we would talk about it a little bit, and then somebody would say, how about this? And somebody would pound out a drum beat, and we'd get the guitar going, and all of a sudden we'd be like, that's it. And then we would just go and do some scratch vocals, and we liked it. I had some very definite opinions about what I wanted to do. For example, the song Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I made it very clear. I said, I don't want that to sound country.
Yeah.
I want to have my own sound with that. And if I do anything country, I'm going to get compared with Patsy Cline, yeah. And I don't want that.
Right.
I want to be known for my own version of Crazy. And that's where we came up with that. And so it was just a very good collaborative effort with some really great musicians.
How would you describe your own sound? And it's okay to be complimentary.
I try to have a richness and a relaxing sound. And I like my voice to have a bit of a sex appeal to it. I don't know if we can say that or not. You can take this out.
Oh, yeah. No. It's very, you have a playfulness that makes me not surprised that Frank Sinatra is one of your vocal, idol might be too strong, but models.
Mm-hmm.
Because like Frank Sinatra, some of these tracks remind me of, you're just holding that note because it feels good and it sounds good. You know?
And that is actually true. I enjoy, I go to a vocal coach, which a lot of singers and vocalists do. And she is often trying to get me to try faster songs because mm-hmm. I do enjoy holding the notes and singing it just because it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun and it's beautiful. Yeah. Have you ever sung something and then said, oh, shoot, I unintentionally channeled fill in name of singer here.
In the beginning, I think I did that more often than I'd want to admit, which is why I went and decided to see a vocal coach. In the beginning, when I first started singing, I didn't think you could do that. I was like admitting some sort of failure. But then I started realizing that there were very famous people who did that and readily admitted it. And so I thought, well, why not? And got a great recommendation. And that doesn't really happen too much anymore because we've worked quite a bit on a style, on a sound, things that complement me, areas that I need to improve on. Sometimes it's as simple as, you know, you need better breath control here. You're getting into a bad habit.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody like your mother or your husband isn't going to tell you that.
Because they're not going to know it.
Right.
Sure.
So sometimes it's just that. So I try really hard to not channel individuals anymore.
Sure.
Just because I want people to think of me with the song, not somebody else who performed it.
So I'm curious, is there kind of a scientific method? If you're getting ready to record a track, do you sit down, look through your own MP3, CD, vinyl collection and play every version you have of that song and say, nope, don't want to do that. Nope, don't want to do that. Nope, don't want to do that. Or do you try to kind of lock yourself away from hearing that song for a while as you start working on it, rehearsing it, getting ready to perform or record?
Well, for me, at least right now, the more information I have available to me, the better. So I do have a tendency to listen to music a lot. And a lot of times it's vinyl.
Yeah, vinyl.
I love it. scratches, pops, I don't care. I like hearing the way it was originally intended to sound before all the remastering.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with remastering. I like that too. It seems to give me a frame of reference to study those styles, and then you have more information to extract the kind of song you want to build for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Do you, when you perform, do you have the same group of musicians, of instrumentalists you perform with pretty regularly?
No. Sometimes, and I know some of the studio musicians that I used do perform live.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them actually have very good live gigs and are very good at what they do. But sometimes a studio musician is more a studio musician.
Sure.
And so you can use a variety of people. Sometimes the stage musician doesn't always make the best studio musician.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are exceptions.
Different skill sets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there are exceptions to every rule. So, but I don't always perform with the same group.
When you do perform, do you ever find yourself changing something because an audience has reacted in a particular way?
With the song or with the set?
Either one.
There are times with the set that I have chosen that I get a read on the audience, and I always usually build in a couple extra songs.
Mm-hmm.
That if I feel we don't need this or we could use that, I can make some changes on the fly. I typically don't change the song too much during a performance.
In part because you're working with those musicians with whom you've rehearsed it, so
yes.
You don't want to throw them for a loop. But
yes. You know, with jazz, which is the great thing, there's always room for changing.
Yeah, sure.
You know, if you want to change the tempo a little bit, and, you know, the musicians are good enough. They can figure out kind of what you're doing. But I try not to get too crazy.
Sharon Gamble with Tony Deckers. You can hear Tony on Saturday, April 27th at 8 p.m. at the Indie Fringe Building. And you can learn more about her at tonydeckers.com. That's TonyDeckers.com. TonyDeckers.com. Let's listen to a bit of her just released first album, Shades of Blue.
I see bluebirds singing a song, nothing but bluebirds all day long. Never saw the sun shining so bright, never saw things going so right. Noticing the day from now on. From now on. From now on, from now on.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You know, it's such a short month.
February is.
It is.
The shortest of months.
The shortest of months, but it means we have to talk fast to get all of our calendar of events items in.
That's right.
It means it's time for a very fast edition of
What
Do
We
Do?
There's so much going on this month,
it seems.
I mean, every weekend. Something going on this weekend, in fact, that I think is very cool. Students from 25 Indiana schools are going to be taking part in the state Poetry Out Loud finals that the Indiana Arts Commission has been organizing, and they are going to be taking place at the Indianapolis Marion County Public Library Downtown Central Branch Saturday at 11 a.m. The competition begins this Saturday, the 23rd, and they are students from all over the city as well as the state, which is really cool. And the state champion receives a cash prize, and there's all types of other cool stuff going on. But you know what? This would be a really nice day just to come out and support some great young students who are going to be reading some really great poetry.
And the event's
free. I mean,
it's free, and they have the greatest number of schools ever this year. I got to be one of the judges last year, and it's so moving. It's so dear. And the students aren't who you might have just pictured. Mm-hmm. They're not all, you know, the English majors. There's every kind of kid. There's punk kids. There's jock kids. There's just everything. And it's so dear. It's very cool.
Well, check that out. 11 a.m. at Central Library, Saturday.
Indeed. Hey, this Saturday night, Roger Schmelzer, the wonderful singer who's very fond of kind of great American songbook stuff, but with a little bit of a twist, he and Mark Timko are going to do not one, not two, but three sets of jazz standards sprinkled with cabaret tunes at Chef Joseph's at the Connoisseur Room. That's this Saturday night, the 23rd. No cover charge. Restaurant opens at 5 for dinner. They start their first set at 7. Yummy food, a beautiful bar if you prefer to just go and have a little cocktail. You will feel like you're in New York City. So go check out. Actually, it's a small place, so you might want to check and get some reservations.
Reservations.
That's what those are called at first. Roger Schmelzer and Mark Timko, Chef Joseph's at the Connoisseur Room, this Saturday night starting at 7.
So, Sharon, have you heard about the new partnership that the ISO has with New Amsterdam?
Just a tiny bit.
I'm still trying to get my head around this, but basically it's like sort of similar to what they do with Time for Three, where mm-hmm. Time for Three is a separate organization but has a lot of stuff with the ISO. New Amsterdam is a presenting and artist service organizations connected to New Amsterdam Records, a record label. And it's all about public engagement with new music and new composers and crossing genres. And anyways, they're doing some really cool new stuff as part of a new partnership with the ISO over the next 2 years. And one of those events is actually coming up on March 9th, on Saturday, March 9th, after the premiere of the Bertel work that they're doing. Several New Amsterdam artists are going to take the stage with the ISO for a special concert event, and their community member, Shara Warden, My Brightest Diamond, is going to serve as vocalist for this whole event, and it's inspired by Homer's poem, The Odyssey, and a whole bunch of other stuff, and honestly, I'm still trying to get my head around it, but it sounds cool.
You might have to just go.
I think that's what I just have to do, is go. And if you go to the ISO's website, IndianapolisSymphony.org, you can find out more when you look for, you don't want to lick them, you just want to look for them, New Amsterdam. Maybe
that's
you could lick
the,
them too.
Possibly not the best way to show your appreciation
no,
for your Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. I don't know.
I don't
you
know.
Probably have to go individual by individual. By the way, speaking... oh,
yes,
dear.
Sharon.
No, if you've turned your radio back up
moving
to protect
on.
The children in your car, congratulations to the ISO for securing a new executive director.
Yes.
Our friend and colleague Scott Hoke will have an exclusive interview with him coming up soon, and I'll have an interview a little bit down the road after he's a little bit more settled. So stay tuned for all that.
Very good.
Hey, I know people who are starting to get cabin fever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this up-down weather thing's getting to people. Well, here's a possible cure. This Saturday afternoon and evening, the Slovenian National Home on the Near West Side is presenting a Simply Cabin Fever Party. You don't have to be Slovenian to go. The venue opens at 3. The food line opens at 6. On the menu, country sliced ham, chicken, green beans, and parsley potatoes. You are asked to bring your favorite appetizer, wow, salad, fruit, vegetable, or dessert. There's a $5 free will offering, and they're going to have music by the Hoosier Polka Jammers, who play more than polka music. So it just sounds like fun. It's family-friendly, children admitted free. And once again, that's this Saturday at the Slovenian National Home, starting at 3.
Very cool. Yeah. Hey, you know, I mentioned when I was trying to explain what New Amsterdam is with the symphony, I mentioned Time for Three.
Stop licking the musicians.
Stop licking them. This Saturday from 2 to 4, there's also going to be a Time for Three concert at the St. John Lutheran Church on Southeastern Street. And that should be great. If you haven't seen Time for Three, then treat yourself. Check this out. Time for Three concert, 2 o'clock. This Saturday, St. John Lutheran Church.
It's going to sound like all roads lead back to something connected with the ISO here a moment.
And the, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's some people who want to lick them, but that's just... The guys are, I mean, they describe themselves as what, a classical music garage band?
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Okay, they're going to hate
you
me for
know
that.
They won't let us be this wacky on our TV show.
No.
That's why we have to take advantage here. Music with Sherry Tefila presents a stellar reunion this coming Monday, February 25th at 7:30 p.m. All-star performing artists, including, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Time for Three.
Wow.
IU violist Atara Rod and American String Quartet violinist Lori Carney, as well as the series artistic director, violist Michael Strauss.
Nice.
Longtime former member of the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. And also, Associate Concertmaster Philip Palermo is joining in on the program, The Lush Romantic Souvenirs of Florence by Tchaikovsky and the Seldom Heard String Octet by Max Brook. So that's all coming up at Shari Tefila this coming Monday night, 7:30.
Very good. Okay, here's something not ISO related directly.
What?
Yes, American Pianists Association is presenting their final competition finalist on Sunday, February 24th. It's the fifth concert of the Pro Lions Energy Classical Fellowship Awards, the American Pianists Association, and it is going to be featuring finalist Eric Zuber, who's going to be performing solo with the Chopin Piano Concerto No. 1 with the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. See, there you go.
I see.
Very, very good. So that is taking place at the Eugene Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center this Sunday at 3:30.
All right. Changing gears a little bit, you, I hope, got a chance to hear Travis's really fascinating interview with Gary Taylor and Terry Burris, the dynamic duo of Shakespeare interpretation, at least Indy's dynamic duo. Don't forget, Measure for Measure, the first version, is this weekend, the 21st through the 23rd, and then Thomas Middleton's more familiar adaptation of Measure for Measure will be featured in the second weekend, February 28th, March 1st, and 2nd. You can get tickets at indiefringe.org.
You know, I haven't seen it yet, of course, because it hasn't happened yet,
sure.
But I gotta give a big shout out to those actors to be able to work on and memorize the lines that of two so similar but yet completely different plays.
And remember who they are which night.
And, exactly. That's amazing.
It is. I mean, no kidding.
So, last thing, Sharon, what do you got?
Don't forget Butler Theater's production of Pigeons, new play by Dan Barden through March 3rd in Lily Hall Studio Theater.
Very good. We'll be back next week with more on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Da Vinci Pursuit has just announced a call for artists to participate in a kinetic sculpture project. Artists, architects, designers, engineers, makers, students, fabricators, and inventors are encouraged to design an interactive kinetic sculpture to be installed outdoors on the southeast quadrant of downtown Indy. Travis DiNicola spoke with founder Mark Kiesling to find out more.
Mark, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
It's always good to be here. Thank you.
You bet. Now, last time that I had you on, Da Vinci Pursuit was just at the starting gate. I'm not even sure the gun had been shot yet, but now you are out of the gate. It's been a little while. You've been doing some really interesting projects around town, but the newest one is this public art competition. Before we get into details about that, though, do me a favor and just sort of recall briefly, what is Da Vinci Pursuit? Because it's a really interesting idea, or a group of ideas coming together, I suppose.
Sure. I think the best way to describe it to people is pulling artists and scientists together, and they collaborate together to create pieces of art as well as with a little bit of science education, mm-hmm. little science bent. In a way, the simplest way to describe it is it creates an art museum mm-hmm. and science museum together, but outdoors. So it uses the city itself as a museum.
And different locations. I almost kind of think of it like a food truck model.
Yeah, it is.
In that it kind of, you know, goes from place to place mm-hmm. and it not, you know, isn't necessarily always at the same place twice.
Yeah, it is. And the way we're looking at it is what we want to do is use it in a way that highlights areas of our city that mm-hmm. are more challenged. So, for instance, in the fall, we did a large sculpture just off Kentucky Avenue and mm-hmm. I-70. And that has brought as a gateway to the new development of the White River Trail that's heading south. They're completing that part of it that will eventually connect down from IUPUI.
Okay.
So this creates a gateway from that neighborhood.
And what's the sculpture?
So the sculpture is called 19.
Mm-hmm.
And it was commissioned and done by a local fireman, Clyde Pennington, who's a steel sculptor.
Yeah.
And so he created this really wonderful sculpture that also works as an outdoor classroom. And then that was put in place because the Key Learning Community is there and the fire department does education there. So it created this for really a neighborhood that's about 500 residents or so mm-hmm. that got isolated really because the White River cuts around that edge, and that has always been there. But when we put I-70 across, as we did many
really
of our neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
we cut off and, in essence, cut off a little bit of a neighborhood. So that brought a lot of attention.
So the work that you're doing, I mean, it sounds like it necessitates quite a number of unusual partnerships because of working both in the art and sciences, working outside, working in the community. I mean, I recognize that not all the work that Da Vinci Pursuit does is public art, but some of it certainly is.
Right.
In other cases, you've done concerts. In other cases, you know, sort of, you know, different events. But the newest one, the what you're working on now, which is this outdoor kinetic public art sculpture competition, brings in just a ton of partners. I mean,
it does. And we're working with people from architects to, you know, people like Big Car, SEND, which is the mm-hmm. Southeast Neighborhood Development Corporation. We've got
KIB.
KIB. Mm-hmm. It's a really diverse group.
Yeah.
And then the challenge has always been is trying to find the right scientists to couple with the right artists
mm-hmm.
and get those together. And in this case, that's what's beginning to happen in this. And we just had an artist meeting a week ago, and we have about six already in the pipeline, and we have till March 22nd for other artists to join in.
And the Arts Council is a part of this too.
They
right?
are.
Yeah.
And that was exciting too, because one of the things that the Arts Council and Da Vinci Pursuit saw in this partnership was trying to build a little more capacity, because mm-hmm. one of the things that we find in Indianapolis is we always hear, oh, well, we only have four or five artists who do that.
Mm-hmm.
So something large like a kinetic sculpture, we only have five, maybe we have six that we know are identified. This competition allows us to get others in the pipeline, and then in a way,
mm-hmm.
what we'll do then is connect them with engineers, with science people, with people that can fabricate
sure.
and build capacity in Indianapolis for other artists. And they are professional artists, but they may not have done anything of this scale.
So tell me what you imagine as best as you can. I know that this is still pretty open because, of course, you want the artists' ideas.
Right.
But the end goal here is to have some sort of large outdoor sculpture, kinetic, kind of in the Fountain Square area? Is that roughly the area you're looking at?
Yeah, somewhat. We want it to be within, sight distance of the cultural trail, for
mm-hmm.
one.
Okay.
And second, it has to be on some land that would be in that quadrant of the city, so what we would call the near southeast side.
Yeah, sure.
So that Fountain Southeast Square is a part of that, but also over where the new, you know, the new city development is.
Sure.
The East Street
Cityway
stuff,
and Alexander
all
and all that, yeah.
So there's several possibilities. We haven't locked down an exact location until we actually have a design. This is kind of those.
Sure.
But we've identified some that are possible.
And does the sculpture itself have to I mean, by being Connecticut, it certainly has motion and physics are a part of it. Right. Does it have to have more of a science element?
Well, not necessarily. Yeah. But what it has to have are there are three criteria that we looked at that were really big for this. One is that it has to use only human power as the sole source of energy for it.
Okay.
So you could imagine people running on treadmills,
moving
things.
So not necessarily something that would be moved by the wind or...
No.
Okay.
So human power first.
Okay.
Then it has to use simple machines to transfer that power into other ways. So it could, you know, generate off of a generator, a battery, which could run
or
LED
crank
lights at
or
night.
Who knows?
Could be a crank.
Yeah.
Could be anything.
Okay.
And the third piece of this is we see this as the beginning sculpture of a park. So this set of designers gets to define what the output from their sculpture will connect to the next one.
Hmm.
And they get to define what that would be. So, for instance, if they put a fan on this one and say the next one is wind power, it has to use part of this plus grab wind power.
It sounds like that old mousetrap game to some extent. I'm picturing it, like how it gets built.
Right. So you're picking,
Right.
So our hope is to create this kind of sculpture park.
Yeah.
At the same
time.
And
each one connects eventually to each
one. Each one connects.
Mm-hmm.
And then if outside the physical proximity of there, we've got some ideas that we've been kicking around using some cellular phone technology that would allow sculptures in different parts of the city to communicate, which would be an interesting thing. So people interacting in Broad Ripple might be able to cause something to happen on Mass Ave, for instance, with this piece there. And people would be wondering, well, where did that come from? So what we're trying to do is get this kind of almost crowd that sculpture does some things when there's more people involved, but it always does something when there's just one. But as you seem to amass people, more happens.
And now I can't help but think of, you know, the new orangutan facility at the zoo where the orangutans are going to be able to turn the light on of the top of the construction at night, which is going to be a great thing too.
Right.
As I'm hearing you talk about this, from what you were saying earlier, it sounds to me like you're looking for artists who don't necessarily have to be the electrical engineers or understand all the ins and outs of fabrication. You're really looking for idea people. Am I correct? You're saying, you know, just because you don't know how to make this happen, if you've got an idea that's a really cool idea, then we'll work with you in figuring that
out. That's right. And that fits within Da Vinci Pursuit's mission. Because what, again, in that idea of capacity building, it may be that somebody has a really cool concept, but they've never, ever figured out how or have never met with anybody who knows how to make the simple machine part work. So what we can do is that's where we, with a pool of other resources, other people that are out in the community, we can bring them together with that and, in a sense, make that where it's successful.
So how does this all work? You've got an application on your website, but what's sort of the time frame? What are the logistics here?
So the time frame on this is that we began the competition at the end of January. People have all the way to March 22nd to submit online, so they can go to the DaVinciPursuit.com. The other is at April 7th, then we'll have a final at the Arts Garden. So actually what's great is then all of the pieces will be there in the Arts Garden on that Sunday afternoon. And then we'll give the $1,000 prize, which is a part of the incentive of this too. So we have a $1,000 prize for the winner of that. And then that person would go on to get a commission to actually have the work then produced later. And so they would also get an artistic fee later.
Okay, so I'm thinking probably for a lot of this work, $1,000 isn't going to be enough to make the work.
Absolutely not. But $1,000 is a good attractor for an artist to give us a concept.
Now, do you have some funding in place? Is that correct?
We do. We have some of our initial funding came from Braveheart Foundation in Indianapolis, a small family foundation. It's fantastic. Wants to see things furthered in that community, in that area. And then we've got a commitment from the Lilly Foundation to be a partner in this as well. And so there are some others to be announced as we get designs.
Okay.
But it's pretty exciting. CICF is a part of it. So we've just got a lot of interesting partners.
Very cool. Well, so again, on was it April 7th is when...
April 7th.
And that's when all the designs will be sort of shown off.
Shown, and then we'll show the winning design.
Do you anticipate some people might have models or sketches, or it could be all...
We suggested that they give us sketches and they give us a narrative.
Okay.
If somebody wanted to go to the level of having a model, great. But it's not required.
Okay.
And then it goes through, and, you know, we've got some pretty neat judges from each of those organizations that are pretty, but they're going to, again, they're going to look at concept. Is this a
concept that's really viable?
Is it cool? That, you know, is it playful? I think in everything that we want to do, we want to have a sense of whimsy. So does it have enough whimsy to it as well? You know, we don't want to create something that is going to become something that isn't exciting day after day to people to return to.
Now, is something like this, a contest like this, or artwork like this, or an art type of park where the art's connected directly in this way, is this something comparable in other cities that you've seen, or?
Well, we've never really seen anything quite like this,
where
we put art and science together quite in that direct way. We think that's a fairly new concept.
Travis DiNicola with Da Vinci Pursuit founder Mark Kiesling. To find out more, including how to submit your ideas for the kinetic sculpture, visit thedavincipursuit.com, thedavincipursuit.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallraff Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I find out what all the buzz is about the Power to Give program and website.
And I'll talk with art educator Nate Heck about his new Artrageous with Nate videos.
Then I'll chat with storyteller Robert Kikuchi in Goho about his upcoming indie performance, and we'll have our arts calendar week called
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.